Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
The 2025 soybean crop developing basically at a normal pace and looking pretty good for late July.
Brad Rippey is a meteorologist with USDA looking at the latest soybean crop conditions.
76% are blooming or beyond by the 27th of July, right on par with the five-year average, a point ahead of last year. Slower progress is confined to just a few areas, mainly in the western corn belt, where we see Nebraska coming in 73% blooming, 85% is the five-year average. Looking at soybeans reaching the pod setting stage by July 27th. That too, very close to normal for the nation as a whole. 41%, five-year average is 42%. We were also at 42% last year at this time.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
A recent congressional field hearing in California spotlighted how the One Big Beautiful Bill could deliver meaningful support to U.S. ag. Held over the weekend at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library, House Ways and Means Committee invited producers and business leaders to testify on the bill's impact. California rancher Kevin Kester told lawmakers the act would ease tax burdens for multi-generation operations. Provisions like a permanent estate tax exemption, full expensing for equipment, and continuation of the 20% small business deduction cited as essential for producers facing tight margins and high capital needs. He also emphasized the bill's livestock-specific measures, including expanded disaster aid, improved indemnity coverage, and investments in animal health. Bill's supporters say permanent tax certainty would help producers plan, invest, and survive market shocks. Farm groups also pointing to reforms that strengthen crop insurance, boost commodity reference prices, and expand support for new and beginning farmers. Lawmakers said the hearing a chance to bring rural voices into the national tax conversation. Ocean freight rates for shipping grain from the U.S. Gulf to Japan climbed $52.75 per metric ton as of July 17th. That's the highest level since October of 2024. Rates rose $4 from the previous week, marking the largest weekly increase since August of 2023. Analysts attribute the rise to improved demand for iron ore in the Atlantic and strong grain export volumes from both the U.S. and Brazil. USDA projects the U.S. will export a record 69.9 million metric tons of corn during this marketing year. As of mid-July, over 10 million tons remained unshipped. Brazil's second corn harvest underway, adding to global vessel demand. China also imported a record 12.26 million metric tons of beans in June, but primarily from Brazil, further tightening vessel availability. Grain inspections show U.S. wheat exports hit 732,000 metric tons for that week. That's the highest total since September of 2022. Nigeria, the top destination. Class 1 railroads moving over 27,500 grain carloads during the week that ended July 12th. That was a 21% jump from the prior week, and grain barge traffic also up sharply on the Mississippi River system. Well, farm production expenditures in the U.S. totaling $477.6 billion last year, down nearly 1% from the previous year. That's according to USDA's annual Farm Production Expenditures Report. Feed, farm services, labor, and livestock-related expenses, the top four categories, accounting for nearly half of all costs. Feed led at $73.2 billion, followed by farm services at $55.5 billion, labor $51.5 billion, and livestock and poultry $49.6 billion. Average spending per farm declined to $254,043, and diesel remained the largest fuel expense at $9.9 billion, but fell 9% from the previous year. And this is Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I think we both wanted to make a deal.
At a press conference over the weekend, President Trump, along with European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
You know, you said something that is very important. It's going to bring us closer together. I think this deal will bring us very close together, actually. It's sort of, it's a partnership in a sense, but it's a very good point, and it's something that's very important.
And what about pharmaceuticals?
Not pharmaceuticals. I mean, we're going to be, as you know, a lot of companies are coming into the U.S., and that's unrelated to this deal. But it's, I think we, you know, this is, didn't just start today. We had a meeting. I wasn't sure. I said 50-50. I think you probably felt the same thing. But this started months ago, this negotiation. So we knew pretty much what we were getting into. And we were able to make a deal that's very satisfactory to both sides. So it's very, it's a very powerful deal. It's a very big deal. It's the biggest of all the deals. It will be the biggest of all the deals. So we're very honored to have done so. And your staff has been fantastic. Yep. And they've worked together long and hard.
They worked hard and long. And many thanks to the teams on both sides. It was, as I said at the beginning, a heavy lifting you had to do. But many thanks also for the talks we had many times on the way to our goal. And now we made it. And that's good.
We really made it.
Trump did say, though, when it comes to energy and metals.
The energy is a very important component because we have more energy than anybody else in that sense. And I think it was very wise that they buy a lot of energy, and it's great stuff, and it solves a lot of problems. So that was a great decision, I think. Steel is staying the way it is. The steel and aluminum, et cetera, that's a worldwide thing. That stays the way it is.
One question from reporters around the topic of chips. Trump with Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick.
Well, the expectation is in 2 weeks' time we're going to come out with our chips 232, and that was one of the key reasons that the European Union came to talk to the president to try to resolve all things at one time. And well, I'll let you wait for the 2 weeks until you get to announce your plan, but we are going to be bringing chip manufacturing back to the United States of America.
We'll be doing a lot of chips. A lot of companies are coming in from Taiwan and from other places into the U.S. And they're doing that in order to avoid tariffs. And the president really avoided the tariffs in a better way for them, much better way, much more conclusive, I think probably much more profitable, definitely much more profitable, and got a lot of benefit from it. So. It was a very interesting negotiation. I think it's going to be great for both parties. I think your various countries are very happy about this.
How will other countries react?
I think everybody's going to be happy with this. The Prime Minister of the UK, while he's not involved in this, will be very happy because, you know, there's a certain unity that's been brought there, too. You know, we have a separate deal with them. But I think everybody's going to, he's going to be very happy to know. Look, he's friendly with all of you. I think he's a very good man. And he's going to be very happy to see what we did. I think UK is going to be very, very happy.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Well, the flash sales are definitely welcome news, but is it enough to offset expectations not only of the U.S. corn crop and its potential yields based on the pretty good weather that we've had throughout the season for the most part here in the United States, but also the expectations of what's coming in terms of South American competition? And clearly the market is saying no.
Bob Mowers with Manduka Trading in Chicago.
I mean, we need to see a considerably big trade deal and or some new demand come in or some kind of issue in terms of the supply side of the equation for corn for this thing to really turn around at the moment, at least until we get through harvest. That's just my opinion. We'll see how things play out, but that's just the general takeaway from the way the market's been trading. Commonality between corn, wheat, and soybeans, weather conditions, overall bearish. Got a cool warm weather trend across the Corn Belt coming up. I mean, it's hotter than hot right now here in the Chicago area where I am. I know it's been the same elsewhere, but nonetheless, it's supposed to break into the 70s in a matter of a couple of days. So even when we have these periods of rather hot, at least it's been either preceded or along with some kind of corresponding precipitation. So it just rained here yesterday, by example. Just giving you a personal anecdote. And that helps, right? So it takes away, if it's dry and hot, that's one thing. If it's wet and hot, not always ideal because it can be too wet in some places, too hot in others. Maybe some don't get the precipitation. We know all the variables, but net-net, you might see some kind of yield decrease. But at the moment, everything seems to be pointing more towards sustained yields, which obviously lends to a bit of pressure in the prices, especially when we're not seeing enough export sales at the moment. The South American competition that's increasing, Argentina permanently cut corn export taxes from 12% to 9.5%. So my simple math means that taxes went down about 25%. Okay. That's just from the 12% down to 9.5%. So they, therefore, might be able to get a bit extra business. You got cheap Brazilian corn expected to soon hit the ports. That's going to undercut U.S. prices. So that's not a good thing for corn. And the other thing is those cattle on feed numbers that are bullish for the cattle market aren't so bullish for the corn market, because with less number of head to feed, because they're not available at the moment, that obviously reduces the demand on the livestock side of the equation, at least from cattle. And that is yet another bearish element that the market has to absorb and deal with. In terms of Argentina, real quickly, again, not only did it hit the corn market, but it also hit the wheat and the soybean market with some decreases in their export taxes. So again, it wasn't just a corn thing, it was also a wheat thing and a soybean thing in terms of things becoming relatively cheaper out of Argentina, which obviously is just yet another piece of competition that we have to deal with. So that's what we're dealing with in the grain markets. These markets are mostly trading at the lows. I would say soybeans have a bit of a bullish story as long as bean oil can continue to sustain gains and be one shiny element for the market as a whole, for soybeans, that is, and just kind of continue to watch the soy meal crush futures. I think they'll be a good tell. If they start to soften, then that might say that maybe some of the luster for the bean oil demand is pulling back a bit, and that might be a bearish element that starts to build in the soybean market. But for right now, plenty of downside pressure in these markets. It's just going to be a wait and see to see if some new catalyst comes along to kind of change the course.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This bill actually strengthens the safety net to make sure that the folks who need the help will receive the help.
Over the weekend, House Ways and Means Committee holding a field hearing on the One Big Beautiful Bill, Nebraska Representative Adrian Smith.
So as we move forward here and reflecting on how productive, if I might emphasize the word productive, what we did in 2017 was, because I think Mr. Huff, Mr. Kester, Mr. Fulton touched, and Mr. Simmons touched on productivity in our economy, especially manufacturing, from Mr. Timmons. But agriculture, small businesses, our goal was to increase productivity with a tax cut so that the American people could benefit without triggering inflation. Administration changed in January of 2021, pushed all this cash out there, triggered inflation. We didn't want to do that again. That was a big mistake. And so that's why we shifted gears here to pass the bill that we ultimately did the other day that I think will be great for workers. We heard from workers yesterday, very eager to experience the benefits of the new bill, because they experienced the benefits of the last bill. In 2017, what we did, increased wages at a faster rate than executive compensation. A lot of folks don't really want to talk about that, but that's the fact.
Smith questioning some of the witnesses, including Kevin Kester, former president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
The death tax. Many would say it's a double tax. I would love to get rid of it entirely and permanently, but that's not where we ended up. But we did end up with an exemption, and it is permanent. Can you speak to the usefulness of that permanence in terms of perhaps agriculture operations and other small businesses as well?
Absolutely. For the estate tax, which we not so fondly refer to as the death tax, my family is over the last 30 years has spent tens and tens of thousands of dollars trying to plan legal expenses, plan for mitigating the different rates and exemption amounts over the years. And so now, with the permanency of having a baseline indexed up, we can plan and wisely try to transition for our generational family ranching operation. I can't overstate how big that is to have that certainty and knowing what the limits are going to be. And at the same time, hopefully we can have the discussion about full exemption in the future. But it is hugely important to my family and many other ag operations, family-run businesses, to have that permanency and certainty of what the numbers are so they can properly plan for future generations.
Jay Timmons is president and CEO of the National Association of Manufacturers.
Could you reflect slightly on the importance of interest deductibility and how that is carried out with your members?
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you for your leadership on interest deductibility, Congressman. You spoke to our small and medium manufacturers group earlier this year, and it was one of the top issues that you heard from them. Because especially when a small manufacturer wants to invest in new plants or equipment, if they want to invest in research and development activities, if they want to if they want to build a new facility, obviously they probably have to borrow some money. And the cost of interest has, for the last few years, because that provision expired, the 2017 provision expired, the cost of interest here in the United States has been much higher than it has been in other countries around the world, which is a competitive disadvantage. So by restoring that, you've enabled businesses, frankly, of all sizes, to increase their investment capacity and to grow their businesses and to create more jobs.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
My name is Kevin Kester. I am a fifth-generation rancher from Parkfield, California. I'm the owner of Bear Valley Ranch and Vineyards.
Kester testifying over the weekend in front of a House Ways and Means Committee field hearing on the One Big Beautiful Bill.
On behalf of cattle producers throughout America, I offer my sincere thanks to the members of the committee and to President Trump for developing a tax package that enables family businesses like ours to compete and succeed for years to come. Thank you for providing long-term relief from the death tax, for permanently extending Section 199A, increasing Section 179 deduction, and restoring 100% bonus depreciation. With these tools and others in the tax package, rural family businesses like ours are more equipped to compete with larger corporations and spur growth in our local economies. For cattlemen like me, long-term relief from the death tax is a significant victory. I cannot overstate that. The death tax relief we fought to secure in the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was set to expire at the end of this year. And for many cattle producers, that would have triggered a massive tax on many estates. Farm and pasture land is our most valuable assets. And sadly, many families must sell parts or all of their operation to pay for the death tax. This is land is used to produce food, and it is land that we have paid taxes on for decades. Taking land and livestock out of production significantly hurts the profitability of our family agricultural operations across this country. NCBA published the results of a nationwide tax survey, and of the 1,200 respondents, 60% of cattle producers would have negatively been impacted if the death tax reverted back to its previous levels. And unfortunately, I have firsthand knowledge of the devastating impact of the death tax. It took many years for me and my family to pay it off. That is something I hope no farmer, rancher, or family business ever has to face. Thankfully, because of your leadership, many families can breathe a sigh of relief. Likewise, the permanence of 199A small business deduction will ensure that the pass-through businesses can compete on equal footing with corporations. Many cattle operations are structured as pass-through businesses, and many of them would have faced a tax increase if the deduction expired. By permanently extending 199A, cattle producers are empowered to make thoughtful planning decisions for the future without worrying if they will face a tax increase down the line. Like other small businesses, cattle operations require significant investments in machinery, equipment, and depreciable assets. And we rely on Section 179 and bonus depreciation to afford those necessary investments. Increasing Section 179 and restoring 100% bonus depreciation is a major win for small businesses. And making these provisions permanent will give us the flexibility we need to invest wisely in our businesses. The tax package of the One Big Beautiful Bill contains many provisions that will help my family and many other ranching families as we plan for the future and spur economic growth.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So the cattle on feed number, 98.4% of last year. Expectations were 99.1, so missed it by about 0.5%.
Bob Maurer, Manduka Trading, Chicago.
Placements, though, 92.1% of last year, so basically minus 7.9% on the year. And expectations were up at only about minus 1.8. So a huge miss there. And not only was that a surprising number, it was the lowest in the last 16 years. Absorb that for a minute. The lowest number in terms of placements in the last 16 years. Marketings were 95.6. Expectations are now about 96.4. So subtly lower than expectations. But net-net, because of the on-feed number and the placements number, you would expect a rather bullish move. And to your point, we really didn't see it. I would say, had we not been here, and what I'm talking about is the highs of the market and some pretty stratospheric prices at the moment, at least it's the feel out there, and we, instead we were coming from a lower level, an average level for the cattle market, I would say that normally these types of numbers would get us closer to maybe a limit up move and maybe even limit up all throughout the day. But instead, we did end higher. There's no doubt about that. But the cattle futures market's only up about a penny and a half or so. Feeder cattle up around, we'll give it, you know, give or take about 2 cents. So normally, I would say this would be a much more bullish number, save for the fact that we're trading at the levels that we've been trading at. Now, we did eke into a new high, so we'll see how things go. We didn't settle at the low for the day, so we'll see how things go throughout the week. It's probably going to be more about where cash actually decides to trade to see if we can continue to gain on today's gain or if we're just going to fall back a bit. In terms of just looking at the structure of prices, if you look at the August live cattle future, it's trading around 227 three quarters. That's about where it settled today. Going out, though, into the October, December, February, and April of next year, and into the summer of next year also, we see lower prices. So the market is actually saying, at this point, if you believe in the efficiency of the markets, that things are a little bit overcooked on the upside, and the probabilities of supply and demand finding a lower balance at a lower price is the likelihood at the moment. So we'll see how that plays out. We also got the inventory number and the July 1 cattle inventory, 94.2 million head. That was record low for that day, which is just indicative of anybody who's been following this market already knows that the quantity of head out there is low. Also indicative of that, last week's slaughter, 549,000 head. That's down 14,000 week on week and down substantially from the same week last year, which was 605,000. So again, kind of reinforcing the supply side tightness. We'll see where cash wants to trade this week. Last week, generally higher, about $1 to $4, depending on the region, even though the five area weighted average ended up a little bit lower. Box beef prices settled lower, about 366.70-ish. That was down from about 373.5 the prior week. And that just kind of indicates at the moment a bit slower beef demand at the higher prices. We'll see if that continues as a pattern. Packers, I believe, are working in the red still. So, yeah, there's only so long that that can happen until some kind of market adjustment needs to occur, either with higher box beef prices or lower cash, in order to bring things back into the green for them. So we'll see how that plays out.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Continued rainfall in many areas east of the Rockies
is keeping us with, well, not much bad news to talk about. Week after week, that is true again this week.
Regarding USDA's crop progress reports, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says corn crop progress for the period ending July 27th reflects
76% silking by July 27th. That is 1 point behind the five-year average, but a point ahead of last year, 26% of the U.S. corn reaching the dough stage, 2 points ahead of the five-year average. Average, but 2 points behind last year at this time.
With corn crop condition
still rated significantly higher than a year ago,
soybean crop development, according to Rippey, is at a normal pace. While condition
remains quite good for this time of year, it actually creeping back up to the levels of a couple weeks ago. We have hit once again 70% good to excellent. That is up 2 points from last week. 6% very poor to poor. That is down a point from last week.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.